Domination of Black by Wallace Stevens. At night, by the fire, the colors of the bushes and of the fallen leaves repeating themselves, turned in the room, like the leaves themselves turning in the wind. Yes, but the color of the heavy hemlocks came striding, and I remembered the cry of the peacocks. The colors of their tails were like the leaves themselves turning in the wind, in the twilight wind. They swept over the room, just as they flew from the boughs of the hemlocks down to the ground. I heard them cry, the peacocks. Was it a cry against the twilight or against the leaves themselves turning in the wind, turning as the flames turned in the fire, turning as the tails of the peacocks turned in the loud fire, loud as the hemlocks, full of the cry of the peacocks? Or was it a cry against the hemlocks? Out of the window, I saw how the planets gathered like the leaves themselves turning in the wind. I saw how the night came striding like the color of the heavy hemlocks. I felt afraid, and I remembered the cry of the peacocks.
Our marriage was like the marriage of Jimmy's guitar and Janice's voice, email from a friend. Explosions in the bunch grass, caught by the well house they were, not caught exactly, witnessed, encumbered thusly, standing and moaning, a shiver, a tremor, and even as it was happening, thinking about making it happen again. Lilacs that time of year, everywhere. Smell is impossible to describe except as syllogism. The lilacs smelled exactly like lilacs. Had he known when he'd pressed himself against her back among the novels in translation, he would have known where this was going. First misery and indecision, then all out of proportion, then jonquils and mayhem, a braid of garlic on the kitchen door. They could get there only by slipping through at midnight. She may have offhandedly mentioned Dublin, the streets, Joyce sobbing another's name. The books were various and thick. One would read aloud, then the other. Then his face between her legs as if sliding his tongue along a book's crease. Lingua, lingual, language. Vulva, labia, that lather and froth, mother tongue, father tongue, tongue in the crease, a murmuring that was a species of song, a song that was a kind of joy, a joy mixed with mud and feathers. O hail, O hearty, O remaindered and acclaimed, his tongue in the crease, the marvel of that. Skin soft as the fragrance in humid heat of lilacs. At sunset, the nighthawks sculling, flicking like languid swallows over the cattails. On tenterhooks they were. But how to live under this sky, these stars, fragrance of lilacs and the slumbering bodies. Wake then, taste everything, this smooth black pebble. That dogwood branch, explosions in the bunch grass, fireflies liminal in their passage over damp grass, a momentary brightness, a prolonged darkness, some places they call them lightning. You can refute Hegel, but not the Song of Sixpence, William Butler Yeats. This freedom is not academic. It thrusts hard in the ephemeral darkness and tumbles to the slaughterhouse floor. Then emptiness opens its arms once again. The quarrel between light and curtain is settled by one sweep of the arm. Though we wanted perhaps comfort, we got instead this retrenchment of hope squandered at the altar of desire. We wanted perhaps a scuttle of words about night and time, or the nightmare in which we're exposed as the flawed and flayed creatures we are, ridiculed by the gowned and suited grown-ups, their gloved hands applauding lightly our sudden launch at tenderness, as if this groping darkness, the candle guttering finally out, this freedom we sought and were granted by darkness, and that was by dawnlight snuffed, could, among the 10,000 things, the griefs and betrayals, the gossip and grave diagnoses, bring a cup of comfort to our cold lips. They know, those dank observers, who loosen their ties and cough lightly into their sleeves, caretakers of caution, they'll retire to chenille and thread counts, smug in their laundered thoughts. But this freedom is not academic. It inaugurates a rill of light that streams wholly into the grail of our own cupped hands. Still Life with Tarnished Spoon. I Made the Wrong Mistakes, Thelonious Monk. 1. Times when you could almost feel the snapshot congealing around you, the light of 50s light, colors artificially bright, the day M slammed J's finger in the car door, the faded sunstruck blue of the car, the white crease, the blood, finger dangling at the second joint. Single mother at the wheel, aunt yanking the door open. Grandmother, widowed and arthritic, hovering behind the curtains. The screaming children unloaded, the car graveling hard toward pavement. The surfaces scrubbed, the run chromatic, landing on the tonic so everything was settled again, but all that gorgeous damage along the way. The finger backed with metal, gauze wrapped, mummified finger, trophy, key. He had cystic fibrosis. It sounded like something the priest might chant at church. Cystic fibrosis, ecum spiritu tuo. Boxes filled with jars full of pig enzymes in the bathroom closet. Best known for his farts, his baby face, impish smile, and the heave and heft of his odors. Later, his bowling. Stork thin, he swung the 16-pound ball onto the hardwood, set it there like a champagne glass. Working with Monk, John Coltrane said, is like falling down a dark elevator shaft. This dark, this shaft. The day the cheerleaders spread across the lawn, shouting in their husky cheerleader voices, the boys on their knees in the upstairs window watching, fascinated, a little terrified. The break here, jaunty, whimsical. If it had words, they might be, I hear someone like you talking through the wind chimes. I hear voices in the stovepipe sighing in the air ducts. The raccoon family had wandered through the neighborhood in the night. In the morning, a single baby raccoon stranded under the playhouse. Not yet weaned, it sucked our fingers, licked our necks, put its cool hands into our ears. How could we not? We did. Once launched himself onto the Avon lady's leg, threw his own legs around one of hers, hugged it hard while she hooted and tried to shake him off. Once dove into the back seat of the insurance man's Buick and hid there, masturbated madly in his cage. When we finally tried to release him, he went straight into our house. We drove him across town. 2 days later, he hopped up the steps to our back door. We drove him to the next town, watched the fence line for days afterward. You can't make anything go anywhere, Monk said. It just happens. Happening in the sunset over the frozen marsh. Happening in the harrier's looping flight over the cattails. Happening in the crenellated blowworm writhing in the rabbit's throat. 2. Were these the right mistakes? The father drove the D10 dozer into the drainage pond. Left it running there, swam ashore. The right mistake? The father berated the boy for dressing like a girl on Halloween. The right mistake? Late night fire in the vacant lot. The right mistake? Wife and children packing and leaving while he was working or drinking rotgut at Harry's. The right mistake? Hiding the children with relatives on the back road farm, not quite family, not quite strangers. The right mistake? Younger brother staring at the road, at the disappearing car. The right mistake? 3. It wasn't a family that talked much. It was a family of elisions. Surplus and dowager, divertissement and succubus, stumble and decree. Long silences at the breakfast table. Yellow flash of flicker's wings on the neighbor's mossy lawn. Orioles in the fountaining willow. Sugar in the sugar bowl, tea-stained and clumped by the tarnished spoon.
I imagine my heart held together by a procedure named after a bird. Government water flows freely through both ventricles, cascading to the east in turbulent backtalk and pooling to the west in shale flats where revisionists paddleboard. The fact that we didn't know if we were in the light or just left by it. The sound, a secret whelp, jetty side, adrift. It would be heartless to point out the building, arrested by its own shadow. That I do share its contours. That I do grieve with the mollusk, pressed like a tsk to the shell. In this experiment, there are words for dreams, but no dreams for the experiment to fail. Because I write so many letters, I deduce I must be in exile. A marshy, reedy place off to the left, a slough, a dry riverbed. Crack the shell, crack it, the wave swell, the smell of it. If I am audible, allow my sob to collide and latch itself to a more worthy desire. The answer that finishes ringing when you wake into the question, washed up on the beach outside the Q&A relationship. What is it? Dead sea lion, half arcs in reaction to where the surface disturbs. Maybe the trick is conversion, to reach the destination and to find you can't stop. Midway down the fins, there are nails of no use. Vestiges. They clawed their way out of the dream, only to return to the dream, the moment reality distorts. Arrestive gesture, uncloaking sly shoulders, but extending arms. Always something more, like sand and sand grown damper by moon-pulled waves. Approaching lamplight in the ribbon grass, kerosene and glass held to the night by one solitary hand. Lantern and a flock of weed-nesting birds scared up in tidal wind, and we hold bread to their sounds, spit out our hair and toss hunks of well-bleached bread into the many-mouthed night. But you are closer to infinity, closer to the intertwine of surf, crash, and bird flight. Arrestive pivot, the line gone slack. You find more land to trample. Stir the foam-choked strand into marvelous additions of invisible creatures testing height. Testing the interlace of extension and ascension. You swivel gypsy taunts and flash glimpses of the slender where you intercross, where you Mobius two sides of instance and tack the moment to your trance. How your depths endlessly unfurl, both unabashed and punctual. You discharge minstrels with your oboe shape and the breadth of your crescendo. like sound, you know no gravity, yet you fly to the end and return like the scythe, carving yourself in bas-relief. Reverse curves and sine waves, sideways, house martins diving and soaring from the eaves of your trestled sentence to gather more sea-turned souvenirs from the wake of your previous intention.
Flicking off the light switch, lichen buds the curved creases of a mind pondering the mesquite tree's dull ache. As it gathers its leaves around clouds of spotted doves, calling them in rows of 12 back from their winter sleep. Doves' eyes, black as nightfall, shiver on the foam coasts of an Arctic dream, where whale ribs clasp and fasten you to the language of shifting ice. Seeing into those eyes, you uncoil their telephone wires, gather their inaudible lions with plastic forks, tongue their salty ribbons, and untie their weedy stems from your prickly fingers. You stop to wonder what like sounds like when held under glacier water. How Nahokons, the north, feels under the weight of all that loss. I cover my eyes with electrical wires. See yellow dawn eclipse stop signs turn green and screech into phosphorescence. Each flickering finger, a memory of a flashing yellow sign, blinks between charcoal sheets of monsoon rain, then slices through the thawing of our hunger with the cracked eaves of a shattered house. Its autobiographical muscle, stringing trees into a forest, convulses only to be flattened under its metallic leaves and sold as bricks for its basement of fire. What land have you cast from the blotted out region of your face? What nation stung by watermarks was filmed out of extinction and brought forth resembling frost? What offspring must jump through the eye of birth to be winked at when covered with brick sweat? What ache piled its planks on the corner pier now crumbles onto motionless water sniffed at by forest smoke? What makes this song a string of beads seized by cement cracks when the camera climbs through the basement window, winter clouds coiling through its speckled lens? What season cannot locate an eye in the dark of the sound of the sun gyrating into red ochre after I thought you noticed my language was half wren, half pigeon, and together we spoke a wing pattern on the wall that was raised to keep us out there where calling became culling, distance, distanced, in a mirror scrape of enamel on yellow teeth? What father woke, turned over his wife, she didn't want to, but he pushed until the baby leapt through. Now, 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 strummed into a chorus of burn marks on ceilings where police sirens fruit magpie skulls on trees of monsoon lightning. What is how the song chimed in the wilderness. In a stadium of afterglow, I parcel ounces of my body for each acre grazed. Spear my hands with my sharpened knees to keep some kernel of this trail my own some piece of the idea of now before it becomes was. Chipped along the scalloped edges of flint, this captive house opens its windows as you dream green, the antelope growling from the inner ring of the pictograph's central spiral. You notice, leaning inside the broom closet, a fur mop peyote stitched to the wet floor. Star maps dappled with frost lifted with the gavel when a highway begins swerving out of the rain-drenched kitchen. It is here they scoop granite stones from your chest, snap each rib shut over the highway leading south, comb your hair over pine smoke, dreaming out of the ship that carried their shackles here. Their blue squeal, rectilinear in pre-dawn air, blows northward, followed by a fog of galloping horses. It is here they shake down branches to lift the veil, so the water of our clans may keep from gushing out, and leave in its muddied path strips of grief swelling luminous between the chest, its plate bone, and the dimming atlases of our lungs. There is no sign of a trail leading out, only a pond of mule blood at the basin of the dam resting between us. Together we climb the song's hair, step onto the plank, and hear birth cries erupt into a bridge of starlight, connecting the ink-soaked shores of our nameless bodies to anchors of swans coughing dune sand onto a dry riverbed. Lifting the cloth to smear the reed invisible, I notice spiders emerging where our hair slipped out, and leap by firelight into the raft scribbled on pond water, its translucent oars chiming metallic as it sinks below sea level. The aching inserted sideways underneath the linoleum floor begins to sound less like weeping and more like the cawing of crows gathering thirsty, fat-bellied, outside the keyhole, for whom we have become bodies for the first time, for whom our language stabs a fork with a spoon.
From here, the apple of the world will pop out and roll over generations. You, as well as I, stuffed bags in our eyes. We cut down pine trees. We scraped the rust from mousetraps. We pulled the black plasma's teeth out. Twice I attacked a thick clod with my scythe to split it open. I was rolling clams and calves over deeply touched messengers. They surrendered, and their painted mouths, bitter wine, ran over. Then I flung a spear to the robust moon so I'd know the exact time. That's how I know. Time is tall and yellow, the child of the sun itself. I walked through a valley where gray hamsters licked my mouth and cheeks. Three steps ahead, a dark banner with an inscription, La Spada, was hanging vertically from the sky. At first, I thought of digging a trench underneath it. But there was no time left. Behind rocks and bushes, I saw cannon barrels that belonged to an English trading company aiming at me. How did they ever make it to the center of the earth, to Mexico? So, on a silk of the banner, I spurted into the air, spun for a long time like a screw from the sun's heavy pressure over the valley, and then landed softly in a sandbank on the same spot. Now the same quiet reverence in the middle of the valley that I had loved my entire youth. In 1965, in Macedonia, in August, in the mountains, at sunset, we locked ourselves in the church of St. Nicholas. We burned incense, sang, and made love until night turned white. The white angel rose up. He tenderly touched my belly and hips and lifted me. He threw me amid lovers of dance, amid hags. They were swimming on the island. They showed black sweet ass here and there strewn with oak leaves on which crawled ladybirds. We reached the ledge where a muse was beating a horse. She pressed his throat. She threw pearls in my eyes and they wounded me. Then the horse was given angel's wings and the muse's silver belt. He dashed upon me and ground me, so I became a puddle. Jackdaws drank the puddle. Indians scattered ashes into it. And so I held a pueblo inside my bosom. On the outer side of my skin, there was a cross, and the field mouse was like a bug in a swift and wild dance, begging the clouds to surround me. Me, who was sticking up and scratching the skies without respect.
What have we here on the pedestal in a museum of whimsies is a thing. See this thing. But this is as far as we go. No admission paid. And we walk down to the mouth of the river, drunk on champagne, and out on the ocean. We cannot see the endangered lack, the brackets emptied. Yet imagine the whale's baleen, how it nets a microcosm who become the singular strained mass mashed into a composition in your stomach's cockles. All of those musics are available at fireside. Is it vulgar only because it is obsolete? When every song ever cataloged is in the wake of the tale, is lodged on the beach as ambergris? Is trash become treasure? The trash vortex in the gyre, the Japanese glass fishing floats in the gift shop. We point. Why? How? What was it we saw? Too late. The soft improvisational plinks begin. Thank you.
All right, that's good.
Neither major nor minor, diatonic and not, the net, a night network. Heroia Miura's gnosis teases with a sense of kitsch, like a missing link from Bartok's microcosmos, a score for the mausoleum of dead whims. Though earnest, and for less practiced, earnest hearing ears, it recoils against our cold intelligences, stabbing with its echoing singularities, rebuilding in low fidelity to a piece. I play one on top of the other, Bartok Miura, in a broken andante until fine, a new nocturne. On the peninsula of sand, starlight under a moon that absorbs its own light like a black hole. In the tall grass, a figure blinks. What is it? No admission. And a white silhouette is the entropy of loose velvet. What is it? No admission. A blinking light refracting frantically in the high gray cirrus. Something slingshotting in the illuminated clouds. What is it? We hope it is brilliant naivete, firing between the tines of the piano score, not glissading, but glissandoing onto the glad companionship of poesis. This is our vomit on the inky sky, a claw of stars, the infinite, the cave, the tread marks on the beach when we walk on both peripheries of the sun, its dawns and its dusks, its solstices, the lace waves, the moon's nimbus, the flow-out tides, the distended winter erratic oysters with their black lace cilia, the sea oats arcing beneath it all is atonal music. As all of it turns through the ether, singular, the same first steps, first notes, in the middle, pressed between a pointing finger and a firming thumb.
a light, a room, lakes upon lakes, the hen's head blazing drops to the mat. I want to sleep in the straw through the slant afternoon, my own head a bowl of apricots, where the blood tracks on the forested overpass, not the antelopes, where the thunder clouds in my belly, not the dark strokes of men. There is no man in a tower with a stopwatch. Tonight, no moon to break myself against. A light, a boat, unlit room. Don't sleep yet. I'm rowing toward you. I have drunk the night's perfumes, poured tea, batched leaves of the sea's decay, tumbleweed, chokecherry, skeleton leaf. To ascend, I read, you must first descend. Go out a different way than the way you came in. Dawn comes, a lambent orb hovers above the plains. A woman robed in red-stitched silk flames at the railroad trestle. Spanish dagger, flat-lined horizon, black Angus grazing in the creosote. Wind whips dust into a slender column, pirouetting over parched fields. No song for the snakes in the dun-colored grass. No doves, no Lucifer hummingbirds. Clouds, noctilucent, portend tornadoes. Antelope cram into gabled chambers. I rattle through pink ocotillos. Siphon the sand from my throat. At the crack in the road where sky bleeds through, I wrap myself in thunder's rolling cloak and dive.
To have nothing is sometimes better than one could have hoped. Yet as lampposts stutter to admit that at dusk the sky is somehow darker than the water, to have something is even less. I confess I have withheld from you. By night I am comprised of thread, spun from carded air, can divide myself or seduce the loom and widen such with wind, that if you abide yet on this earth and breathe, you cannot help but contain me in some small portion. Yet by some chance you do not, the mistake is mine. I have arrived at the wrong world, or at the wrong time. This thought so small, so wholly indivisible, every eye I have turned to the matter of your whereabouts, the windows of the city as innumerable as your body, and I count them as I count you in compendium, while as passenger on slumbering pelican, I coast the thermal of the column, deafened by recollection of plenty. Bronze strokes announce ghosts of abundance that flatter broken alleyways. In the risen wall from indigo robe and spangled cowl, the sun strips to skin, home in its marble sash, an aperture, inanimate. There is nothing to be done. I am poured back into this vault, my body. I am interred in falling into this hold, my body. And from that far-off rim, the coal-rimmed edges of your eyes retreat, shadow puppets stepping back from rice paper at the final act. If this is you, again, you are too fleeting. Raise up your hand to me, and I will see it, finally. This is only substance here between us. Yet inconstant as memory of remnant breath, we condense and return to dampen cracking continent. We are exhalation bearing headlong for every entrance we can find. We are stop motion of ourselves in flight, mesmerized by the tide. We are light on hold and will resume as form requires us, converge again in some other room. As above the window closes, your hand appears. It kindles at the fringes and I see it. There is only substance here between us. We are light and proof. We are light and fire. I parse the parts of firmament that flood the room. We touch everything and are touched. Though our mouths be taken from us, the center comes first. Circumference follows. That shall be the whole of the law. Listen, glassblower. Listen, pendulum. Though our faces have been smoothed of feature and our ears stopped fast, we have these our hands, though sense of touch has forsaken us in foreseeable collapse. If not hands, we have these our remnant stumps. Listen, cornflower. Listen, saffron. Though our tongues swell thick as roots, have dived. Though our skins unmake their tiny orders of integument and release. Though the centrifuge. Though spindrift our blood this suspended sheet, we cannot hope to overcome it wholly. We must meet with lust for bruising the whole of the bristling law, behemoth in the jagged breach. Listen, lullin lathe. Listen well, bivalved hinge. Let us shatter on the charge. Let us fragment and combine to let our cracked bicuspids mark the crater and the sty. Though the whole of the law shall be unwritten, we must speak our remnant tendons, bunched and flat and dried. Our sinews must cluster like rushes on the marsh, and in the slightest stir of wind must whisper milk to the whole of it, and chant it where they touch, choir it, ringing from our lashes, smoldering and singed. Though raised, though iron smacks louder than pulse, we must listen, sower, listen, reaver. Though hammer flattens, folded and damasked, we must listen, basum, listen, transom, speak it, though all has been dismembered and our stolen mouths. Our molecules summarily dismissed, capillaries driven over cliffs, cells ruptured with borrowed pin, atoms heedlessly compressed into the fabric of our voices which have no bodies, has been unraveled and still we must speak it aloud, speak it together or in part. Our mouths have been taken from us. Listen, bosun, listen, tearsel. As frighted hares, our tongues have gone to ground. Root them out, though banished and remiss. We must speak. Listen, direction. Listen, come forth. We must speak. We must speak. We must, because everything can be. Everything that can be taken from us will be taken from us. Speak for it. This law is the only law, that the voice must live. That the voice must live shall be the whole of it. At the center is the voice and will be invented next circumference and all will be restored to us, though there is no promise as to the form of it. That is the body of thee, the corpus of thee, the only of the law that this voice must live, and that we speak it the imperative entire, the floor of thee, the seat of thee, the voice, the heart, and ember in a chamber at the center of the only law that matters. But we must speak it aloud to make it whole.
As to whether I exist, squared to the nine originations of the carnal spirit body, of its clarifying poison or its wheat, does not condemn me or destroy my fate as Loxodrome. Perhaps I am a mix of Yemenese or Omani configuration, possessing a murderous carpentry or a salubrious or insalubrious flexity at the code at which dissident germs must invigorate bronchial delay or answer its breathing by dialectical probation. It is as if each of my lives is condoned with inflationary drift, with deltas, with models of themselves, involving perhaps 4 or 10 dimensions, more stunning than the ambit of an ibis, transcribing its folios in trance. I exist not as a technical brutality, not as a monotheistic transcription, or as a terse, incapable pilot splitting his axis on rocks, but the mind in its horrific degree, completely incapable of limits, incapable of forming zones of bondage by which my tertiary compass responds to hosannas. I have burned in previous lives as one single body, as foiled idyllic monoron, given over to the permanent ache of isolation, to the permanent ecclesiastical gaze of a brackish melancholia, instinctively kept alive by prolonged engagement with a succubus, her names Pyraxia, Karina, Mamaloi. And I have not been able to divide, to re-engender my thirst according to a sovereign maritime picture. I have never been able to see my own breathing or begin to awe myself within a narcotic iridescence. My blood ignites and disperses before the sun and after feeding, contained in itself by crepuscular magenta, by origins of Babylonian iridescence, by a diamond-streaked fuchsia, sometimes drizzling, sometimes a curious sleet in the iris. At these moments, I felt like an epileptic Maharaja, as a salt-burned incarnation, as satrap, as bay, as pasha, nauseous, figmental, somehow plagued with corrosives. I am Loxodrome, whose commission is to depoison sea snakes, to somehow bottle their arteries in clouds, all my actions being noctambulous and wary. My command to capture them as beast, whose color is arlent and xanthic. My daybook filled with diacritical vegetation, and each dissimilar compound that I touch takes on a treasonous reputation, part fatigue, part vertigo of darkness. And I can only chart famine. I can only look into the waters and meander by means of interior connivance, by blackening the mind, by absorbing the salt from its incestuous pulleys. I exist by default, my co-members vacant, and here I am by turns, nacreous, pheric, intangible. And always the inevident escapes from my voice and spins with oracular concealment. Yet during intervals of the voice, a certain smell begins to brew by postpositional acid which blows from the storms of pre-Columbian gerbils. A den of gerbils screaming as fulvescent monsters, burning away their powers by salt, by negative demarcations. Therefore, I deepen my color like a voice from necrotic Amsterdams, existing without register, as if my body has been dispersed through draconian misnomer. Because there are times when winds ignite, when anonymous co-sailors drown in the depths, never telling myself to densely bewail their fragments or day after day imbibe on the cholera of defeat. Each of my symptoms remains as abstract carking, remains nothing more than insurrection as concealment, as ghostly fruit from a noxious lightning tree, as though my cells now waft, as though infinity now spins away from itself and begins at arcane remove to create itself over and over again from transacted explosion to transacted explosion, as a recension with its vertigo, a vulturous Nile, a turbulence of cyclones related to the bliss of a powerful anti-dogma, or to a misquoted hut, or to shelter under comets. I change my existence every other fortnight. I sleep only to renew my substance with the utterance of the void, as though scattered by omniscient protrusions, as a blank Cimmerian marvel, as a baneful specimen, or a jaguar upon the sea, probed for my beliefs concerning an electric palingenesis. I speak by turns cosmos, English, universala, Because of this, my thoughts are never bound by the gravity, by any faction or solemnity. I catch snakes imbibed by day the realm of imaginal terrapin, of mandrill dogs, of darkened locust granaries, where the sun is impossible to feed. So I am invisibly accused of cyclothymia, my eyes reacting, turning raven and silver, saying to myself that I am anti-loxodromic, that I test the depths of biological surcease, and all the wattage of my neurons leaps into a plural quantum point, into a neural source. I execute at random, perhaps as a sun-drained scholar, or perhaps with the psychic limitations of a strident vertiginous pronoun, studded with acquisitive magistry for the one spinning day near the five ghostly fragments around the sun. And I've named these fragments according to their upper or lower arboreal declaration, according to the way they face the earth, according to the nectarious condition of the motion of the mind being always jeopardous, murky, typhlotic. Yet I can see I am photopic. I'm able to breathe blood. I know the southwest monsoon current. I know the central Indian ridge. I know the nautical forms of the Arabian coast, absorbing my visions from the Tibetan plateau. And so the Weddell Sea or the Greenland current mean nothing to me except as extrinsic distraction 5,500 meters from my aura. Yet I always think of waters from heaven, of aeronautical carbon, of a halo of meteors. It is as if the subduction from the abyss was geometric, contained in flecks of stellar dioxide. And so I know the arrows from maps, the flooding in Varanasi in India, its subcontinent heated by moons from other solar dimensions, like rotational vapor or a millibar of ants, forming a copious amount, forming a barrage of central pressure by friction which dwells as absolute reversal. And so, as motif to the storms I now encounter, as a fetid indigo dalliance, I always exert my mirages being from its ethers, the Indo-Pacific swamp crab, the Peruvian calico scallop, or a mullet of my particular personal making. You see, by collecting psychic data from the Sri Lankan central hills, I've been equated to the role of intermittent vampire, to a blue convulsive shark deaf with irregular nesting, my body being listed as a hunchbacked squid, as a ravenous mahi-mahi equated to birds beneath the sea. And the sound of melted coastal ice parallel with living my life in a sightless hurricane cellar, trenchantly kept alive by old biography or germs, yet obsessed by the abyss, by verdurous and inward and being inward with scintillation. I know Asmodeus loei, the yellowish, yellow-greenish Globigerina, the various shark fish which glow inside their absence, so I am ancient without body. I am ghost, I am Gupta, I am the Raja of Ceres, who exists for never ending his solemn inflationary task of searching for spirals in the infinite continuum. Those continuous space-times which obliterate singularity, which partakes of shaken grammatical distance, which translates as breathing, which soars above the mundane orations of God. So by imbibing the monsoon, I feel I have surpassed the old colloquia of magnitude. I feel I have surpassed each tower within enigma, which creates in me chronicles unfazed by paralytics, which creates in me endurance for the love of immaculate anagrams. And my neurons, a garden of sudden voltage and blood, in communion with each satellite in the galaxy, and one of the principal three axes which dissolves an angular dust condoned by dissolution, which dissolves those fragments in life we call the inclement, the bifurcated, the incelestial condition mentally structured as cupidity. So when doves burst, I'm always solemnly enriched by a ragged kind of echo, a mirage which takes me further and further away from the pedestrian graphics of the water, bringing me closer to sea skulls and magic. One ceases to cohere at energetic compendiums restrictive, negative to the way love burns inside one's navigator's soma. And being Loxodrome, an incandescence who sails, it is my contention that a mongoose can love, that a crocodile is born the way virginic stars alight. Burgeoning with strontium, with a perpetual form of nascence which energizes search, telepathically luring poison to my grasp.